Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and I'm joined today by our columnist, Scott Osler. So Scott, you know, here we are at the wonderful Sheraton Grand Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. Just got back from a pretty full day of coverage of Saturday All-Star events. We saw everything from, you know, Team LeBron and Team Steph Curry practice to the media availability to to all the shenanigans that happened on Saturday night at All-Star, which were, in this case, three-point contest, the dunk contest. Adam Silver talked to the media, so it's been a pretty full day. I know both of us are a little tired, but what were your biggest takeaways from today?
Well, they pack the stuff in, man. They make a full day out of it, for sure. And, you know, the access is kind of limited at points, but the interviews I thought were pretty good. The podiums get very crowded and everything, but stuff comes out. You know, like LeBron had some interesting things to say about his political controversy that he's got going on, and Kevin Durant has some interesting things to say. And I would just kind of flit around the different podiums and stuff, but there was always little nuggets, little bits of information, interesting things that reveal a guy's personality.
Yeah, you know, you don't really expect much to come out of those, those situations. Just for the listener, anyone who hasn't been to one of these things, they're the ultimate, you know, cattle call type situation. You're, as a media member, you're standing there with hundreds of other reporters with your iPhone and your recorder out, and you're just hoping to maybe get a question in. And as someone who, you know, covers these guys on a daily basis, you're forced to listen to, you know, people who haven't been around the team, so they're going to ask questions that you've obviously gone over with these guys before. And a lot of times, you know, they'll just ask off the wall questions for whatever purpose.
Here's an example. LeBron today was talking about the political stuff, the controversy with the Fox News woman and all that stuff. And he got into some pretty deep stuff for a couple minutes there. He really did a deep dive into his philosophy of why he feels free and why he feels he should talk about politics and those kind of things, social issues and stuff. And it was pretty deep. And then, boom, there was a slight pause. And the next question was, what's your favorite salad?
Yeah. That was great. Because it was such an impassioned, articulate, response when he was talking about the Fox News anchor. It was obvious that he had put some real thought into that. He knew that was going to come up today. Yeah. He hadn't addressed it yet, whereas Durant had addressed it yesterday with our friend Sam Amick from USA Today. So Durant didn't really go that in depth about it today because he already did, but I was really impressed with what LeBron had to say. It seems like he's shown for a while that he can be a real voice in the public discourse and on social issues, right. But I think in the past, 6 months really, he's really run with that mantle. He's seized it in a big way. Yeah. I think he sees that right now more than ever. The world needs someone like him, right, to be vocal on these issues, because the reality is there might not be a more influential person in society right now, especially for young kids, right, young boys, yeah, than LeBron James. I mean, he is as big as anyone.
See, that's a key point, Con, I think, is that he's not doing it just because he's mad at Trump or whatever. He's doing it, I believe, and it's the same reason that Steve Kerr is doing it, and the same reason that Steph Curry does it probably to a lesser extent, and the same that Stan Van Gundy does it. And those are the kind of the chief, you know, speak out guys. And I think the reason they do it is because they feel that they have an obligation to do it, because they're so impassioned and so angry and so upset and so almost crazed about what's going on in politics in the world, that they feel that to not say something would be a crime, that they would be, you know, they have this platform where some people will listen, and they know they're not all political experts, but they feel a need to express their views and be part of the, I don't know, call it the resistance, I guess. And they, it's almost an obligation now where it's never been that case before that I can remember.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing that's also been interesting is, you know, LeBron has gotten most of the attention for this entire thing, because I think the comments were mostly directed at him, but right. But Durant was involved in this, and Durant was, you know, pretty vocal in that uninterrupted video about his displeasure with Trump. And you know, Durant's a guy that has long said, I'm not political,
right?
You know, but he sees a need to express himself about this, and so it's been cool to see him grow too. I mean, I've only been on the beat, this is my second year on the beat, but in the 15, 16 months that I've been on this beat, I've seen several of these guys really grow into themselves.
Right.
And it's been kind of cool. I mean, we're talking about guys who are adults, you know, they're in their late 20s. They have, some of them have families, and they're finding their voice at a time when I think, you know, the world needs them to.
Plus, they also realize they have some clout, you know. They, for instance, Steph Curry, when he spoke out and he kind of clashed heads with the head guy at Under Armour.
Right.
And Steph wouldn't back down. He knows now he can, if he says something or he threatens his shoe company or something like that, those people quake in their boots, man. They listen to him. These guys really have some influence. And I think they're pretty careful about how they do it. For instance, the Fox News woman who criticized LeBron and KD said that LeBron's comments were, her quote, was almost unintelligible.
And, yeah.
And then she wondered why people called it racist. You know, LeBron is nobody. He's not Winston Churchill. We understand that. But, you know, he expresses himself pretty well. And he strikes me as being nobody's dummy. That he's a, you know, reasonably bright guy. I've never given him an IQ test, but to call his statements almost unintelligible is that's if that's not racism.
And
that's
to say that close. He's not qualified to talk on this subject because he only has a high school education,
right.
And he,
right.
You know, at one point considered leaving high school early for the NBA.
Right.
I mean, that is so irrelevant.
Right.
And it's interesting, and I think it's a topic that guys like LeBron and Durant, who only went to college for a year, I've actually had to deal with more than the average person might realize. But it's so silly, because if anyone was in the situation, the smartest person in the world was in the position to make millions at 18 years old, you don't turn that down.
Right.
It's any career opportunity.
Right.
Like, if you were in college and someone came to you and said, hey, you can stay in college and get your degree, or you can get this job and you can start out making
You can get a job at McDonald's slinging French fries and we'll give you $8 million a year. Okay. I'm leaving school. See ya.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be dumb not to.
Right. Well, you know, that's what Adam Silver addressed tonight, and I thought that was very interesting. Adam was asked
your best
about,
bud, Adam.
Right. He was asked about what he thought about the comments. And, you know, in football, all the owners and the commissioner are very scared of this stuff. They don't want anyone kneeling. They don't want anyone protesting. They're worried about sponsors. They're very corporate, and they're very tight, rear-ended, you know. And it's somewhat the same in baseball. And basketball, though, starting with Adam Silver, it's like we treat our people like human beings and real people who have opinions, and let them express their opinions. And he said that tonight. And Adam Silver actually said, I'm proud of these guys for expressing their opinions. Now, it seems to me that Adam Silver is probably, I'm guessing, like 99%, he's on the same political side that they are,
basically.
But still, even if they were coming out and saying, we love Trump or whatever, I think he would still support their right to speak out. And I think that says a lot about Silver and a lot about the NBA.
Yeah, and the NBA is interesting in a lot of ways, because I think the way it's set up, it's just more ripe for social activism in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is for a couple of reasons. You know, NBA superstars are more visible than any other superstar in any other sport.
Yep.
You know, even Tom Brady has a helmet on.
Right.
You know, you don't, his face isn't visible at all times. And that actually matters. Right. Like, they've done studies, you know, that matters. And baseball, I don't think the average sports fan could look at a picture of a lot of all-stars and name them. Right. I mean, it's just the superstar power is not there in that league. It's not, it's a more team-driven sport instead of superstar-driven sport.
Right.
Whereas the NBA is completely superstar-driven. That's why All-Star Weekend is such a big deal, because each of these guys are their own brands, their own entities.
Right.
And the Warriors are very aware of the fact that they are in a unique situation, because they are not only NBA champions, but they are on the most visible team arguably in the world right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we went to China in October, and you know, there were people in China who knew who Kevon Looney was. Like, I'm not even kidding about that. So, so they understand that they're in a unique position, and they've obviously run with it. One of my highlights of this, of covering this beat so far, has been when I got to go to Harvard with Draymond Green a couple months ago, before the Boston game, and sit in on his lecture at Harvard. And you could really feel in that moment that this is more than a basketball team, and these are more than basketball players. And I talked to the professor who invited him to Harvard, and she called him a cultural influencer, which is a fair label for these guys. Right. They are cultural influencers as much as any academic out there, as much as anyone, as much as any politician. I mean, they matter, and you need to respect their voice, especially when they're coming from a place of knowledge. I mean, it's clear that LeBron has done his research. It's clear that these guys know what they're talking about. And if you want to disparage that, then I'm sorry, it's hard not to call you a racist.
Right. Well, you know? Yeah. One of the things, you know, I'm sure, for instance, if the woman who criticized LeBron has invited him to go on her show, which I think would be a mistake on his part, because I've seen her show a couple times, and I don't think it would be, she's not nice, you know. But her thing is that LeBron, like you said, LeBron isn't knowledgeable enough to criticize these things. Well, I think LeBron would probably agree that he's not knowledgeable enough to criticize, should the tax rate be this or that, or how many people get educated? Certain little minute things about government. But I think he's like a lot of us in the big picture. He can see the big picture. You know, he can see that there's injustices being done. He can see that there's things being done to our country and our government that are scary and in a lot of people's minds wrong. And you don't have to be a PhD in economics or something like that to be able to give your opinion on the way politics is going now.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting that today, you know, here we are on the eve of the All-Star game, and you know, between the two of us wrote several politically charged stories. One thing that got overshadowed by all this, which I think is probably for the best, is you know, the storyline that dominated this weekend last year, which was the KD Russell Westbrook rift. Both of them got asked about their relationship today, and both of them actually answered the question.
Yeah,
which is a development.
It's huge.
In
the NBA world, I'm not being flippant. It's really big. That was a big, long, festering thing. And sum up what they both said.
Well, KD basically said he took responsibility for not handling that situation very well last year, and said that he was in his own head, and that he made it a thing when it probably didn't need to be a thing. He helped kind of propagate it because he was so insecure about it. And that, you know, it's all love at the end of the day, and like, it's all good, we're moving forward. And Westbrook wasn't nearly as, you know, candid, but he did say, you know, we're talking and we're communicating, and like, he there's no issues. And so just the fact that they even were willing to go there in a public setting like that, to me, was interesting. You did see very minor interactions today in practice. They're both on Team LeBron, and they, you know, passed the ball to each other in practice. And there was a picture that the NBA posted to Instagram of them, you know, chilling in the locker room before practice, yeah, talking about sneakers. I mean, very minor stuff. Yeah. And I feel like TMZ sometimes were even writing on this stuff, but just given how big of a deal it was a year ago, and it was another example to me of how KD operates. KD is a fascinating human being who I have really enjoyed getting to know a little bit and covering, because he's as guilty as which I think all of us can be guilty of at times, which is he gets inside his own head a lot, and he overthinks things, and he's very intellectual in a lot of ways, and he's very he internalizes a lot. And I think sometimes that can be a fault of his, because sometimes he can hold on to things that maybe he shouldn't hold on to, and he can take things personally that maybe he shouldn't take personally. Right. You kind of saw that manifest itself with the whole Twitter snafu that he had in preseason, and there's been other kind of minor examples of that. You know, he helped propagate this Westbrook thing in ways that probably weren't healthy, you know, putting the cupcakes on the sneakers and kind of owning that. It's like, why? You're telling us that you want to move on, and yet you're still bringing it up.
Yeah, it's funny because in a lot of ways he's like a little kid in some ways, because a lot of, you know, these basketball players, in some ways they don't have to grow up. They're like professional athletes. They don't really have to grow up. But he's a really smart dude and really thoughtful and seems to me pretty deep in the conversations I've had with him. And I just think the whole thing with Westbrook, I always thought that Kevin kind of took the high road in leaving when he left, and he didn't trash anybody. He tried to be nice to everybody. And I think he was really hurt by the way Westbrook reacted. And Westbrook, to me, is like the more childlike guy in the thing. And I'm by no means calling Westbrook stupid or anything, because I sat in his part of his thing today, and he's a really bright guy, really well-spoken guy, and he talked about how hard he worked to get to college so his parents wouldn't have to pay for his college education. I thought, you know, it's really interesting and deep stuff that people try to dismiss him as just a, you know, ignorant basketball player, I think would be foolish. But I always thought in that relationship it was like Westbrook was the
That being guy said, that, though, I mean, not to rehash it all, but he probably should have let him know at least verbally,
exactly,
rather than via text. I get that, but you know, I know the guys who cover Westbrook on a daily basis. I'm around those guys enough and to kind of pick their brains. And he's not a treat to cover. I mean, he's kind of a schoolyard bully in a lot of ways, and you know, it's part of why he's great. But Durant, in a lot of ways, is the opposite. Durant is very sensitive.
Yeah.
The more I get to know him, the more I realize just how sensitive he is. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting, because I think a lot of people look at someone like Durant and they're like, you have everything. You have the world at your, you know, fingertips. Why do you need to care about what people think of you? Why do you need to, you know, pour over all this criticism? And you know, while that might be true, let's look at some of the greatest players of all time. Michael Jordan, he is the ultimate example of someone who cannot get over his haters. Kobe Bryant, it's a gift and a curse, because they use that to motivate them and fuel them, but they also sometimes have an unhealthy obsession with it.
Jerry West was like that. There's, a lot of the great ones, you can go down the list, and they're sensitive dudes.
It's fascinating stuff. But what about
the stuff tonight? What about the dunk contest?
I can't skip over that, right?
Right.
You know, I actually, to be honest, didn't get to fully watch the dunk contest because I was writing about the 3-point contest. It looked like it was a good dunk contest, though. Donovan Mitchell's the real deal.
Yeah, and I thought I saw the dunks that basically won the thing for him. And I thought they were both really, really excellent, kind of over-the-top special dunks. And if I was judging, I'd give him extra credit for his showmanship, because he came out with 3 different jerseys.
Yeah.
You know, one in homage to Daryl Griffith, Dr. Duncan's team, who was playing before he was born, I guess. And the other one was to Vince Carter. And so to come out with three different jerseys like that, and he was a showman. He rose to the occasion. He said he missed those two dunks in practice, and then he came through and did them in the game. So I thought it was pretty cool. You know, I don't live or die for the dunk contest, but I thought that was a pretty good one. And then Nance had one dunk, his last one, I guess, where he threw the ball off the backboard, caught it, threw it off the backboard again and caught it in a little quick tip-tap, and then dunked it. And that was special.
So. I don't think people even understand how hard that is.
It's crazy. Yeah.
That's so difficult.
So that was fun. I mean,
and the thing about the dunk contest is it's gotten pretty stale the past few years. I think it used to be so fun, you know, back when you had Dominique Wilkins and Michael Jordan, really the best players in the league, participating in it.
Now it's like
a bunch of no-name guys who the average NBA fan may not even be aware of. Right. And I think that there's this strong desire to have the LeBron Jameses, the Russell Westbrooks in it, because you could only imagine what they could do in the dunk contest.
Westbrook. I don't know about LeBron. I know LeBron can get up a million feet, but I don't know if he has the showmanship in that particular kind of thing. But he's probably not going to do it anyway. He kind of hinted today that he's too old to be doing that now.
Yeah, I mean, he's 33 now, which is crazy. He's been in the league. I think this is 14th straight All-Star game, which is crazy to think about.
That's amazing. The stuff he's putting up in the seven straight times in the NBA Finals.
But in some ways, the three-point contest has become a better event. I actually think that they should consider putting it at the end of Saturday night, All-Star weekend, because I think it's more hyped at this point. And I think part of the reason why it's great is because the people who participate in it really care about it. Like, I don't know if you saw the video, but a video surfaced after the three-point contest of Clay, and he's just sitting before the first round just in his own head, you know, with his hands on his face, just like rocking back and forth, and you can tell he's like on one, you know. He was nervous, you could see it, and he was, because he genuinely cares about that thing. Like, and he really wanted
three
to win
times. He won it once, so if anyone has a right to be casual about it, it would be Clay, right?
But he people like to joke around about Clay because he is really funny and he's so monotone and he's so laid back and just kind of aloof. But if you actually know anything about Clay, you know that he's actually one of the most competitive people in the entire league. Yeah. I mean, he is in a much different way. He is as competitive as Draymond Green. He is so dedicated to his craft. Like, I've heard a lot of stories where, you know, when they were in China, the first day they were in China, the whole team was pretty much going to Hong Kong on a day trip, and his agent was there, and he texted his agent, and he stayed back at the hotel, and he texted his agent. He's like, "Hey, can you find a gym for me in Shenzhen? Because I need to get shots up right now." Like he's addicted to shooting.
Yeah.
And that's how you become the best ever, one of the best ever. But he's extremely competitive, and you could tell he was legitimately upset after he lost. And he actually had a really nice performance. He has nothing to be ashamed of. I think most years probably would have won with the performance he had, having 25 points in the final round. That'll win you the competition most years. But Devin Booker was just unbelievable. Hit 20 of 25 three-pointers in the final round at a final round record 28 points, which beat Steph and Clay both had 27.
But I'll put Devin Booker against Clay in a best-of-seven series or something like that. I'll take Clay all day.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. But,
and, you know, the thing is, he's carving out a legend, basically, with his career and with his three-point shooting and with the three-point contest. And I know that he'd much rather win an NBA championship than win a three-point contest, not even in the same ballgame. But he wants to win the three-point contest because he knows that's part of his legacy, his heritage, his legend, you know.
And the thing to look forward to next year is it's going to be Clay versus Steph.
Yeah.
Because Steph has already said that since it's in Charlotte, he's going to return.
Right.
That'll be fun. When they went head-to-head a couple years ago and went to the final round against each other, that was pretty fun stuff. So I think people are already looking forward to that. That'll be really cool.
And if they do it in Charlotte, they got to put that last after the dunk contest. That's got to be the feature, the close.
They probably won't, but yeah, no, it's not a bad idea for sure. Now, tomorrow we have the All-Star game, technically the reason we're here right now, and completely different format, as you guys already know. You know, it's not broken up into Eastern and Western Conference. It's Team Steph and Team LeBron, teams that they both drafted. Steph's team is more guard heavy, good shooters, whereas LeBron's team is a lot taller, more athletic. You know, who, not that it matters, but who do you think wins tomorrow?
I think Steph's team wins.
Really?
Yeah, because the shooting and the, it's a, you know, you get 2 points for a dunk and three for a three-pointer, so.
Yeah, and there's going to be
LeBron's
no defense.
LeBron's guys are going to dunk a lot, and Steph's guys are going to bomb the three-pointers, and I think they're going to win out. So.
What do you think of this format? You think it's good? I'm still a little skeptical about it. We'll know tomorrow, but what do you think?
I'm trying not to be an old fuddy-duddy, but I very much would prefer the East versus West. There's something about the regionalism, and in the NBA, there's always been kind of a different style of ball in the East and the West. There's always been the East was a little bit harder edged and tougher, and the West was always more finesse and more fast moving, free flowing, and all that stuff. So there's always been that East versus West concept, and I liked it when it carried over to the All-Star game. You know, you were guys on the opposite side of the country, you were kind of enemies with them, but they copied the NHL, which I think is a mistake, the whole playground style picking thing. Doesn't do much for me. I don't know.
I feel you. And I do think that they need to show the draft next year.
Absolutely.
And that they can make a big thing out of that. They can have a lot of fun with that. I think it'd be really cool if they actually could. I don't know how you could get them all in the same room at the same time, but if you could somehow simulate like a playground draft, that would be fun stuff.
Right, and have them standing over there on the...
Yeah.
Just do it out on a playground. Go out in asphalt and have the guys stand over in the corner.
I mean, you could do it day of. Yeah. You could do it like the Thursday when everyone gets in.
Right.
You know, for All-Star weekend.
Yeah, why not?
That would be fun stuff.
Yeah. Because we've all been there, you know, the last guy picked.
Yeah. And I think people overblow, you know, who was the last pick? Yeah. You know,
some guy's going to get his feelings hurt.
People found out anyway. Chris Haynes reported yesterday who it was. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like their reputations were saved, you know.
Right.
But it's gonna be fun. There's plenty to look forward to in the next couple weeks. Obviously, when the Warriors get back from All-Star Weekend, they're gonna try to hit the stretch of the regular season strong.
Well, they're coming back. I thought they folded.
Oh no, they're still around. Okay. Yeah, they're not number one in the West, but they still are a pretty good basketball team, believe it or not. So, so it's gonna be fun. I think I'll be joined next week by Janie, who actually I will not be because she will still be on vacation. So maybe I'll recruit you again to help me out.
If you insist, buddy, as long as you keep paying me.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks, Con.
This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Thank You for Playing by Ryan Little, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. This show is produced by me and Fernando Diaz. For more Warriors coverage, you can follow us on Twitter at @con_cron, @con_CHRON, and Scott Osler at Scott Osler, @SCOTTOSTLER. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com.